Hello, this is Abby.
Dear Abby, this is gonna be a long one.
Oh boy.
Dear Abby, how do you tell the difference between a new exciting crush and a rebound?
Does it matter?
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Welcome to our little corner of the internet. This is the Dear Abby podcast. I hope you stay and hang out with us. See you in a sec. Welcome back to my Dear Abby. Welcome back to the Dear Abby podcast. This is Abby speaking, and I am your host. I'm the only one that will be here 90% of the time. I'm out of breath. I am not with child. I don't think I am. Today, I feel very cozy. I feel like it's been a pretty okay day. I've had lots of panic attacks today, weirdly, because I don't really have a lot of those, but I feel like it's coming back a little bit. So I'm having to use all of my tools of when you start to feel a panic come on to just be like, okay, fine, bring it. Give me the worst panic attack you can. But you have like a split second before like all like hell breaks loose and it just feels like you're swirling and everything. There's nothing and you just, there's nothing to hold on to. It just feels like craziness. Super fun. So I've been having a lot of those, lots of existential dread type stuff, which isn't, you know, wasn't on the agenda for this week. Definitely not. This week was just, I just planned to get a lot done this week and be super with my, with my head. And that's just not how it's going. And that's okay. I guess we'll figure it all out. Yeah, I hope you guys are having a good Thursday. You only have one more day until the weekend. Well, yeah, technically, or whenever you're listening to this. I hope everyone has a great weekend and do something fun. Unplug for a bit. Don't look at your phone. Unless, you know what? Just don't look at your phone like all Saturday in the same way you normally would during the week. Where you're looking for things to do, scrolling, spending time on there, whatever. Unless you're not on all week. I guess some people are on all week and then on the weekends they just let themselves binge watch TikToks or Reels or something. For me, I've recently been scrolling too much and I know that I'm suppressing emotions. So, but sometimes I'm like, how many emotions can I have? How many emotions can I have, really, in the span of 1 week? I want to know what other people experience emotionally on a weekly basis because I feel like there is no way that this is normal. There's no way because I'll be like, oh, I felt that emotion. That's good. One day later, it's the exact same and it feels just as heavy. And I'm like, okay, how many times we got to do this? But you know, maybe I'm because I'm looking for like the end of it, that's probably perpetuating it, you know, and making me hyper aware of my feelings. So maybe I should stop doing that for sure. I should stop doing that, honestly. Just, and by that, I mean, waiting to like, till all my emotions are solved or everything's solved, you know, where I'm like, oh, finally, I just feel good all the time and whatever. You know, same old kind of stuff this week. We'll get into Dubs L's. We're talking about, I just want to talk about this episode's really for the people that want to just try again, to just start again. This episode is for you guys, okay? For people who maybe were on some type of journey of something or they're trying something and then they kind of gave up and maybe they're just been complacent for a while or, and I'm mostly talking about myself right now. And then we'll do a Dear Abby, and then that's going to be it. So, dub number one. I've actually cooked myself lunch for work recently. I used to just go to Whole Foods, I'm not kidding, every single day and get something from the hot bar or a piece of pizza for like $4 because honestly, that's cheaper than like making myself food because everything's so expensive. So if you have like something that's five ingredients, they're $5 each. That's $25. But maybe that'll last for like, maybe you can make like four things with that. 25 divided by 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, wait, 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, 24. What? Okay, wait, what was I doing? $6? Wait, what's happening? Wait, did I do that backwards? Okay, if you have, you can make four servings out of, you have 25. Oh, these are like the written questions in like high school and elementary school, all growing up. I can be decent at math, okay? Math was the one subject I'd always get a B in. I'd get A's and everything else. I am not a great test taker. I still am not. So haven't gotten better at that. But I also haven't taken a test in a long time. Last test I took was when I was interviewing, this company made me take a full-on math exam. Didn't tell us anything about it. Like, we couldn't use our phones. It was just some weird, like, you had to find the square root of things, and it wasn't like a, it wasn't an even number or whatever, whatever it's called, that it can be, a square root can be found easily. Anyways, I digress. Yeah, I wasn't very good at math, and when anytime there was a written question, I don't know if this was OCD or not, or just like normal for any kid, I had to reread that paragraph. I am not kidding. Probably like 50 times. That is not an exaggeration. There would always be like four at the end. You know, it'd be like a normal quiz, and then there'd be four like worded questions. And I sometimes I would just not even do those. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't worth my time. My precious 8-year-old time. I'm not doing this crap. Okay. Why do we have to do written? Now that I'm older, that's like the real life scenarios that you actually use formulas for, I understand. But, you know, maybe because I didn't do them, I still now can't fully do it in my head, like off the top of my head. I need a pencil and a paper to figure this out. But I sucked at those. And that's what I feel the failure that I felt as a 10-year-old kid when I couldn't do the written questions. And then I would ask my dad for help. My dad is a great teacher, I'm sure, to kids that are not his own kids. But for some reason, because it was my dad and he was teaching me, I like couldn't take him seriously as a teacher. I was like, what the heck do you know, dad? It just never really was. Sometimes it'd be helpful, but I feel like I just was a helpless case when it came to math problems. But now I actually do a lot of math in my day to day, but it's not like math, you know, nothing crazy. Going back to it being cheaper to buy food somewhere. Cheap. Buy food somewhere cheap, like Whole Foods, like the Hot Bar, or a pizza for $4. And it's a huge slice of pizza for a couple of dollars. Okay, so if you have $25, if you spend $25 and you can only make four servings, yeah, that's like $6 per... That's $6 per serving, per meal. So it is pretty much exactly the same, if not a little bit more expensive, to make myself lunch, like buy ingredients to make myself lunch. But nonetheless, that is probably healthier to like just make more homemade food, even though half the stuff I eat is canned. So is it? I don't know. Been eating a lot more frozen fruit lately because I heard that that's like pretty good for you. I don't know why I'm talking about food so much right now. I don't know why I'm talking about my fruit eating, but that's a dub for sure. A mental health dub, I think, would just be going to the gym when I don't want to. And I've been trying to incorporate more of a mindset of, if I don't want to go to the gym, I'm just going to go. And even if I don't do a full workout because maybe I just am not feeling good, like because I was on my period, I've just had a little bit of, I don't want to say a little bit of insomnia. It seems like, I feel like you either have insomnia or you don't, but I haven't been able to sleep very well. And I've just been up all night racing thoughts, racing like feelings, like lots of OCD urges, feelings, sensations, like weird dream things. And it has not been this bad in probably like 2 years. So I'm still waiting on some things for therapy to get started, well, to keep going. So I will talk about that once I've started treatment again. That hasn't been fun. That's been really scary. It is a dub that I make myself go because eventually I end up feeling a lot better just because I can look back and be like, oh, I didn't want to do it, but I still did it. So I trust myself more and it builds like confidence. It builds self-esteem, you know, and it also just helps me physically. Like, I've seen a physical difference in like my body since I've been going more recently, or more consistently. Wow, so many dubs this week. So another dub is I've been doing dancing. Well, okay, I've been dancing, but I dance on this app and they have dance classes. They have like dance workouts, but also like actual dance classes. And dancing has always been something I've wanted to do. I've talked about it before, and it's not like I want to make a career out of it. That would be cool, but probably not likely. Because naturally I'm not very like, I feel like I'm so awkward. I feel like I'm so awkward when I dance. So anyways, I've been doing dancing almost as like an exposure to like make myself cringe, because I feel really cringy and like, bleh, you know, like I feel really bleh with my body and like the way that I move, and I feel like, eh, I just cringe. And so I'm doing it because that's something that when you have OCD or something like that, well, specifically OCD, it clings to things that make you feel disgust or cringy. Like, it's like, I'm not very good at tolerating those things. So I'm doing it to cringe myself out. And then eventually after the cringe, I'll keep cringing. And then eventually I have fun. And then I'm like, oh, this is fun. It feels so good to move your body and to just like reconnect with my body in that way. I think an L this week has just been, I don't want to say lack of motivation, but my lack of grit. I think when it comes to feeling better and taking care of myself mentally, obviously is such a challenge. I talk about it every week, but I think because I've felt good before and then like I've not like recovered, but I've gotten to such a good place, like the best I've ever been in my whole life. And then I fell again. And I feel like that's, and it happens like without even fully recognizing it for me still, just because where I'm at. And so everyone's on a different pace, but where I'm at, it's like I still fall into it. And then I'm like, wait, how did I get so bad so fast? Like, how did this happen? Then I get really discouraged. And then I'm like, oh, I am the exception, you know, and that type of shame kicks in. That's kind of why I wanted to talk about like just trying again and to relate to people who feel like they're not allowed to like try again, or like their heart's kind of broken from trying and then failing so many times. It's a very heavy burden, and it feels very like daunting to try again in certain aspects of life and whatever you're trying. But if you feel like you can't try again, or it's you've tried too many times, that's a lie, and it's a lie that I'm trying to not listen to. It's a lie that I'm trying to uncover within myself, you know, because I know it's a lie, but also feelings wise, it just feels very daunting. Yeah, I'm working through that right now. I feel like something that helps me when I don't feel allowed to try again, or I feel like scared to try again, is just like practicing a ton of self-compassion, more than I would think that I would need to like practice. Like, it feels really uncomfortable to give myself self-compassion, I think, when I haven't been prioritizing that. Then when I start all of, when I realize that I'm maybe in not a great place, and it feels like a relapse, it makes me just want to give up. Like, that's the feeling that I get, and that's a lot of the storyline in my brain. But deep down, I don't want to, and I will never want to, and I don't want to lose the part of me that doesn't want to. We just need to practice like grit, you know, just like, and self-compassion. Doing those small daily things that start building confidence in yourself and self-esteem. And I think with specifically recovery, if you have tools, if you have things that people have told you this will help and you're not doing it, then of course you're going to be more doubtful. You're going to be more angry at yourself. It's just going to keep fueling this like shame and this self-loathing. So to just start small and just like restart again, but start small and just one little thing, and then just that'll build momentum. So use like that 1 ounce of hope, or that 1 ounce of like, okay, maybe I can get to a better place again. Just use that and keep going. Just as a reminder, because I forget this a lot, and it's so healing to remember that everyone is everyone has it hard in some aspect, but people close to you, people that you know, like everyone is struggling with something. I promise you. And even if it's not right now, because a lot of people are experiencing, like, sometimes I'm really feel like I'm like, oh, I'm not struggling with anything. Everything's great. That doesn't last very long. But, and that's not what life is about, is just like no struggling with something. But I think when it does happen, it feels really good to not be struggling with anything and just be like, oh, wait, this is like why you push through the hard times, you know? But most people probably are carrying a very heavy burden and carrying something very heavy on their heart. And they're probably just as scared as you are. They're probably just as unsure about life as you are, uncertain about the future, about life, about everything. And so we really are all in this together, whether you like it or not. I just want to remind you, you're not alone in like feeling scared or frustrated or discouraged. Like, and there's no shame in that. So that's just, unfortunately, a part of life that I feel like everyone has to experience, or everyone does for some reason. And so you still have, though, a choice, whether you feel like you do or not, you have a choice to like as to how you move forward with that, wherever you're at and whatever your circumstances. If you don't feel like people are validating your experience, then you can validate your own experience. And I think that's been really helpful for me, is to just be like, okay, I don't care if other people don't believe in anxiety or don't believe in OCD or don't believe in, you know, depression and think that it's just because I don't go on runs every day and stuff like that. I feel so much happier when I validate my own experience. And it's not saying like, woe is me. Like, I'm never gonna, I don't know. It's not saying like, oh, my life is so much harder than everyone else and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, I feel this way. That's my real experience. So I'm just gonna sit with that. I don't care what anyone else thinks. I don't care if people think it's real or not. It is real because it's happening to me. But then after, like, I feel like I'm able, like after that part, I feel like that I'm able to move forward and actually make changes, like small changes. But I will forever and always be a big believer in validating feelings and experiencing life fully instead of intellectualizing. And to do that for other people, because I feel like when you let someone experience what they're experiencing instead of trying to fix it, I feel like that's like the beauty of life. Like, truthfully, I feel like that's when I feel the most integrated with life and not in my head, is when I'm able to really experience what I'm experiencing, which sounds really stupid, but I mean, like, and obvious, but it's harder, I feel like, in this day and age, because we intake so much information and we intellectualize a lot of stuff. Because we have so much information at our fingertips, we're like trying to always do the best at every tiny aspect, and that's just not possible. Yeah, so it's hard. Life is hard for everyone, okay? I'm pretty sure it's got to be hard for everyone, or 99% of the people. But life is hard for everyone, and that's not saying that your life isn't hard. It's not invalidating. I think it's just reduces shame, at least in my head, the way, like when I think about how, you know, other people are experiencing the difficulty of trying again and recovering from my specific disorder and also other things, and they have ups and downs. Other people are experiencing that and yet they still recover or they get better. So I think it just helps that it's like, instead of seeing other people and being like, oh, that's so great, I'm so glad they're so happy. Oh, I'm so glad that they have everything they could ever want. And also a reminder that if someone appears very strong, sometimes I see really strong women in either if it's social media or something, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're so strong. They never cry. Like, they're so put together. Most of the people that you see also on social media or on TV or something that seems so strong and put together, I promise you they cry. You just know that they cry when they're alone, you know? There's no way. Some of the, I forgot her name, but she was on some reality TV show, and was so strong when she was with other people. She's so like kind and gentle, but also stern and like will stand for what she believes in. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to be exactly like her. Like, I wish I was like that. And then it shows her like alone and she's crying and she's like, I don't like to show people like my, with certain people, she's like, I don't like to show my weaknesses because they'll take advantage of it and they won't validate, like not validate, but they won't take me serious because I am an emotional woman. And so you just have to like be strong in those moments. But then, you know, when you're alone or when you're safe with safe people, you can show the vulnerability and show the emotions. So whatever storyline you have in your head, just practice letting it go. If it's like, well, I've done this too many times, I've tried too many times, I feel this, I feel that way, just start to slowly but surely detach from storylines, narratives, what ifs, and almost like imagine if there's like a rope attached to that thought or a rope that's attached to that feeling. And after you're done feeling it and after you can witness the thought, then you just like snap it. You just cut it and then it just floats away and it's like no longer fully you. It's just you experienced it and now you're going to let it go. I don't know why we hold on to such negative emotions sometimes, but do you ever just like think about like, oh my gosh, when did life get so serious? You know what I mean? You grow up and it's just like fun. You're just having fun. I don't know what energy is. I don't really understand why you need sleep. You know, you just associate sleep with, first of all, probably being scared, honestly. I was scared since I was a kid every time I'd go to sleep. But yeah, as a kid, just like everything was just fun and you just wanted to experience things and have fun. And then one day, and maybe this just was what happens when you've been a little bit traumatized, you realize, wait, when did life get so serious? Why am I so serious? Why am I so serious all of a sudden? Everything is so serious. I don't want to be like that. But then you feel like you have to, because it's like, oh my gosh, life is kind of serious. But then it's like, is it just serious because I'm making it, or is it actually? If you really want to peek inside my brain, that's really it. Anyways, when did life get so serious? I used to just be a kid having fun. I used to be a kid having fun. We used to flip when we were kids, me and my siblings. I have five siblings, by the way. So there's six of us kids. So when I talk about my siblings a lot, it's because I love them and they are like they're like the only friends that I really have that like get me and I get them. And, you know, even though we're all very different, we have spent so much of our lives together. We used to flip our couches upside down, not upside down, but like sideways. And they were rollers like this, like they were kind of ovally, well, whatever this is. Anyways, we used to put it on its side and we used to jump on it and act like it was like a ship. And we had two of them, so we'd face each other. So like some siblings on here, some siblings on here, you know, and you'd act like you're shooting each other with like Nerf guns and stuff, but good times. And then you just like, see, that's what I mean. You have fun. You do all that silly stuff. And then you get older. A couple hard things happen. And you're just like, what the heck? What the heck? But anyways, let's do it, Dear Abby. I'm excited to answer a question. Because I know that you're an old-fashioned man. Okay, you guys. I am feeling very, very excited and emo. Because this podcast is now made possible by No CD. You guys have heard me talk about No CD a million times in my podcast. I did therapy there. I go to support groups still to this day. And it's been such a huge part of my recovery journey. I couldn't be more excited about this partnership with them. No CD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. No CD therapists are trained in exposure response prevention therapy, which is a gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live, face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists from anywhere inside or outside the U.S. It's affordable and they accept most major insurance plans, so getting help has never been easier. NoCD therapy goes beyond sessions. It includes in-between session support, where you can message your therapist anytime, access therapeutic tools, and get support from a community of peers who are overcoming OCD right in the NoCD platform. Breaking the OCD cycle takes effective treatment. Visit nocd.com today and book a free 15-minute call with their care team, many of whom have also experienced OCD. If you think you may be struggling with OCD, there's always hope. Now is a time to regain your life. Visit nocd.com today. So this one's also a text. I'm going in order, okay? I'm going in order, so I'm sorry I don't have a voicemail. I have voicemails, people. Lots of people listen. Lots of people are sending in voicemails, but this is specifically just a text. I don't know why I tell you guys every time, but it's fine. This is a long one, by the way, so pay attention. And no, I'm not going to reread it 100 times like I did on every single math worded question. Dear Abby, I'm not really sure how to word this, but I would love some advice. I have someone super close to me that I care about so much. She is my best friend. Her husband is super busy all the time trying to provide for the family, and they rarely have time together. Oh gosh, I'm getting sad. I see glimpses of their relationship where he definitely does not value her. He makes her feel like she is not enough as a wife and mother. He is controlling, and it absolutely breaks my heart. Knowing that she deserves so much more, I think she feels stuck because they are married and she committed to support him. She is pretty much a single parent at this point because he is so busy. She is burnt out getting no help or support from him. I see so many red flags from the outside, and I can only imagine what else is going on that I can't see. I personally think she should take her baby and leave completely. I would never say that to her because I don't want to lose her. I try to encourage her and let her know that she's doing a great job and let her know that she is so valued. Maybe it could give her the confidence to know that she deserves so much better. She's the most beautiful person I know. With your experience going through divorce, how can a best friend help and encourage without crossing the line? Love you and the pod. I'm realizing sometimes with advice, I'm like already thinking of like what a good thing to say is rather than just fully. I don't even know how to describe this, but just like fully trying to be in the exact shoes of whoever's sending it in and what actually would be good advice rather than just like what I've heard or, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, that is super hard to watch as a bystander because it is hard to not cross. You don't want to cross that line because if you have a friend that's in a bad relationship, and this is not even a relationship, this is a marriage. That's like a whole, if it was a boyfriend versus a husband, it is just different. Like you can think that it's the same, but there's a certain amount of, I don't know. It just feels different. And because the vows are different, the commitment is completely different. So it's less easy to just like get up and leave. Well, to some people, and it should be a decision that's very, very thoroughly thought out. It's not just like, oh, I'm not happy, so I'm leaving. You know, it should be something that is, it probably will take a while if she does eventually want to leave. And she's like, this is just nothing's changing. Cause I don't know enough about him or her or their dynamic or to like understand if something could possibly shift and change in the relationship can change. So it is tricky. I would say as a friend, the best thing you can do, I think you already kind of know, I guess to just be super supportive of her. Yeah, when you have a friend that's in a bad relationship, talking about their partner in a negative light actually never really, you know, does the job, doesn't do what you want it to do because they've committed to that person, like you said. So I think that what you're doing is perfect and that's all you can do at this point. And just keep reminding her, and not just by saying it, like with words, reminding her, I'm talking actions, the way you love her, the way you support her, to remind her what she deserves. And that is out there that men can offer that type of support and she doesn't have to be with him. Like I was saying, it'll take a long time for her to recognize probably how miserable it is and how complacent the relationship is and how jerky he probably is. You know, it sounds like he's working a lot. He's probably absolutely miserable, especially if he's treating someone else really wrongly. And that's not an excuse at all. Yeah, I feel like you already are doing what you can do. When I was kind of in the middle of we weren't even divorced and we weren't getting a divorce. We were just having a hard patch in our marriage. And I was like, I never we're just going through a rough time. Like, I can tell he's distant. He doesn't want anything to do with me. Like, I'm just confused. I don't know what to do. And that was actually the day of my best friend's wedding. But I didn't tell her. I told my other friend that was there. She was just willing to, like, listen to me and didn't try to, like, tell me and try to give me all this advice. It was just like, I'm here for you. It's going to be okay. And I think that's enough in those moments. But I never really told anyone what was happening in my relationship until after, because it is such a personal decision and it's like her vows that she made. So if she wants to, like, continue and see if he'll change or not is, like, totally up to her, you know, no matter what the decision is. So just keep reminding her by actions, deeds, the way you love, what she deserves, what real love is, and what it can be. And so I think that might help. Just have her recognize the difference so she can personally figure out what she wants to do moving forward. But I would say, I don't know, I wouldn't say to, like, tell her to, like, leave him, because you just never know. I feel like you should, unless you see signs of, like, actual abuse, which is really serious. If you see that, say something for sure. But if it's more just like emotional neglect, not that that's not like abuse, but it's not like physical abuse, or, you know, there's just like, I feel like there's a different line of that where it's like, oh, okay, actually this is like, she's actually in danger. Definitely say something if that's the case. But if not, it might just be something you have to wait on her to kind of come to her own realization of, like, what's happening, you know, and how to move forward. And then when she does come to you, then you'll be ready and you'll be, you know, so supportive, and you'll be able to help her navigate, like, what to do next. But I think you're a really good friend, and I think she's lucky to have you. And every partner in the relationship, like in this case, specifically the male, can just, like, change, you know. Wouldn't that be nice? Just a complete 180. Becomes supportive, becomes, you know, doesn't make himself too busy, is able to, like, create a nice balance. But that is unfortunately not what happens all the time. So, okay, you guys, that's it for this episode of Dear Abby. Thank you for listening. Thank you for showing up today. Have a good weekend. Do something fun out there. Have some fun this weekend. Also, I'm going to go eat some enchiladas. I'm gonna go eat some enchiladas with green sauce and watch some MasterChef and dream about what if I could cook someday and make a mean filet mignon. Love you. Bye. Oh, hey, I'm taking a ride to join it late. 눈치 보면서 들어가.